So this work has been quite a bit of hacking, so there's quite a long author list that I won't read out. But it's been done at the University of Cambridge and also with Citrix Systems as well, who are based in Cambridge. Now, the slide deck is self-hosting. It's actually written in the operating system that we're talking about. So if anyone wants to follow along, you can go to dex.openmirage.org, and the slide decks are all up there under the NSDI 2015 bit. And this one here is running on a local system here that is actually running on Xen. So as we go through the talk, if one of them cuts out, I will switch over seamlessly to the one hosted in the cloud. So just to give you a bit of introduction into as to why we've been doing all this work in unikernels. And a lot of it comes down to the massive surge of IoT devices that are all, quote unquote, becoming smart. And we've seen this this set of beautifully designed devices, weight scales, a tweet, home thermometers that keep an eye on you and set the temperature, and even little printers that you can text to. Now, all of these devices are contain pretty powerful processors and operating systems that are very conventional, such as Linux and embedded distributions. Now, the problem is a lot of these systems depend on cloud connectivity to provide their functionality. And as latency increases, as you go to remote cloud services for all of your compute, you get a real problem of observable latency becoming an issue. So if I try to use Siri to ask for directions, it's going to have that awkward pause of 500 milliseconds to a second while it has multiple RTTs to the cloud, activates its microphones. And when it's disconnected, of course, it doesn't work. So in our ideal world, we want to be able to have clouds of ARM devices that are under our environments, and we interact directly with something locally and upload computation to it and not require cloud services for all of our IoT computation. And this ability to move computation locally and upload it to ARM devices is one of the key drivers behind the Jitsi work. Unfortunately, at the same time, having another trillion devices running arbitrary code has just is compounding the security problem we're facing on the internet right now. We've seen just attack after attack that is hitting operating system distributions and just taking out and leaking our data. So it's clear that if we just continue down this path and deploy even more services built on this infrastructure, things are going to end pretty badly. And in particular, these IoT devices are often stuff that is hazardous to our health if it goes wrong. With heartbeat and shell shock, to some extent, it's okay if a cloud service gets compromised, but if your pacemaker gets compromised, your industrial automation systems, and many, many other things that physically actuate our day-to-day lives, things will not be good in the future for cybersecurity and our general societal health. So we really want to, at the same time as pushing computation to the edge, make things fundamentally more robust on the edge network. Now, there's a few challenges with making this happen. Ideally, on the cloud, we use virtual machines in order to provide very, very strong isolation between services. And the issue is virtual machines have never really taken off in embedded devices because they tend to be designed with an extreme emphasis on resource usage, and they tend to exhibit very large boot times and management overheads. You have to manage multiple operating systems on a tiny little microcontroller. And on the other hand, Linux containers and similar technologies in Windows and FreeBSD and Solaris are really easy to use. They tend to share the same operating system, and they give you a wide interface where you can virtualize parts of the operating system, such as the namespace or the networking subsystem, and boot up a different virtual container. The problem is they suffer from very poor isolation. So if you cram in two competing multi-tenant services, you're never going to get the same level of isolation that you get from a virtual machine that is providing hardware-level protection between two instances. So the real question between our research is whether or not we can eliminate this fundamental trade-off between latency and isolation. Can we get services that are hypervisor-level isolated, but still providing very, very different services at low latency to the users? And meanwhile, in industry, we're seeing some pretty shocking stuff. So industry is not deploying virtual machines at a high rate. So this particular quote from Embedded Computing last week said that the infotainment system in a car is by nature open and internet connected. It's very nice and pretty. And meanwhile, the mission critical driving instruments can't be compromised. But just to save a few million dollars a year, the car manufacturers have just stuck them on the same embedded device and put them beside each other on the same virtual LAN within the car. And we've seen similar issues on Boeings and other aircraft that have their flight control software and their nice movie systems all put on the same infrastructure. So we really, really want to build this stuff so that we can avoid this future and actually have different virtual machines running your aircraft controller and your car braking systems from the system running your music player. And to do this, we're adopting something called unikernels. So instead of deploying large heavyweight operating systems onto embedded devices, we're building specialized virtual machine images that are compiled from the full stack of application code. And the idea behind these have been presented before at several conferences, is that they're single system image virtual machines that only do one task. And they boot, they act as a web server or a DNS server or some other protocol server, and they're contained, they're compact, and they're efficient. So the intention is very much to simplify the deployment and management, sacrifice dynamic configuration, and just have this specialized appliance just doing one thing and doing it as best as it can. Now, this is a graph from Asplos just showing that when we first built unikernels in x86, they can boot very fast. So where Linux takes quite a bit of memory and a highly optimized instance can take over half a second to boot, we can boot these things in 10 milliseconds in x86. So we have some interesting raw materials to work from when building our new system. So the contributions of the work here are that we've taken all of this work in unikernels and we ported them to ARM-based infrastructures that run all over our physical environments. So we ported unikernels to Zen ARM 7. So this is a new architecture in the Zen hypervisor, which is formerly only really supported x86. And in addition to maintaining the ARM port, we've also ensured that all of the unikernels built using our prototype are type-safe all the way down to the device drivers. So we built the code up from the device drivers all the way up to the protocol stacks and ensured that down to the shared memory layer at Zen, that there's no non-bounce check memory. So we're trying to maintain that invariant through all of our benchmarks and evaluations. And then we constructed this Jitsu tool stack that is trying to figure out how do we take unikernels and just boot them on demand only when necessary. Because obviously we're running on very resource-constrained embedded devices, and we don't want to constantly run all the services we need. The intuition is that some services will just wake up on demand, execute for a few seconds, and go back to sleep again, all cocooned within a virtual machine environment. And finally, we just want to evaluate this against existing alternative systems such as Docker and just try to figure out exactly where we sit in the space of isolation technologies. One thing that I should point out is that this is being presented from this little device that I will very gingerly hold up because there's some power that is looking a bit dodgy. And it's a 2 megabyte unikernel. It's written in full OCaml, and it's something that anyone can download and try out as well. So you can just go to openmirage.org, and if you have $40, you can just buy one of these boxes and give it a try. So we published all of the source code out there. You can just see the little board there if you can't see that on your screen. So the Jitsu tool stack. The idea behind Jitsu is that it's a replacement Zen tool stack that still maintains compatibility with existing virtual machines. So you can still boot Linux and FreeBSD and so on, but it's highly tuned for booting up unikernels. And to do this, we had to do several things. We had to break a number of assumptions caked into the hypervisor tool stack that it's running in a big, beefy data center, it's got gigabytes of RAM, and it's only running a few virtual machines, for example, 10 virtual machines per host. In the case of unikernels, you can, in theory, run tens of thousands because they're all tiny with very little resource requirements, but you still have the latency of those data center assumptions that are baked into Zen right now. So the first thing we did was to do a number of performance improvements to Zen that I'll describe. And we wanted to answer the question of whether virtual machines are fundamentally too slow to be used on these embedded devices or not. But you know, if we can beat the state of the art with Linux and FreeBSD and now Windows on ARM, then we're doing pretty well. Now, once we have these things booted, we have to establish a distributed system within the ARM box that does not have the overhead of all of the existing virtualization solutions right now. So right now, you tend to have a bridging infrastructure on a host, you use loopback TCP, and you have all of the overheads associated with a full networking stack. So we wanted something that operates within shared memory timescales and not on TCP timescales, both for resource usage and for latency. And then finally, I'll describe how all of this is glued together into an on-demand stack. So the basic architecture of Jitsu is in this ARM box, we have a few goals. The first one is that we have ARM hardware and it's running the Zen hypervisor, but all traffic from the outside world must go through unikernels. None of it is ever exposed to something written in a C networking stack. So this way, we can have a reasonable chance of running this stuff for a few years without it being hit by buffer overflow attacks. And because it's also written in a slightly higher level style, it's hopefully more immune to other higher level issues as well. There's details of all of the attacks we've looked at in the full paper. And these unikernels all communicate with the toolstack through a shared memory transport provided by Xen using a database known as ZenStore. And the Jitsu toolstack just sits there, and it uses the Linux kernel as normal in Xen to mediate physical hardware. And it also can spin up legacy virtual machines such as Linux. Legacy is possibly an inflammatory word. Conventional virtual machines such as Linux and Windows in order to provide services that you couldn't get in a clean slate unikernel. So the Xen ARM toolstack was an interesting exercise. It actually required a lot of coding and was more interesting than we expected. So we had to rebuild the entire operating system infrastructure for a new ABI for Xen. So we built a new mini operating system called MiniOS. And this MiniOS, because we had the chance to build a clean slate, removed all of libc. So it doesn't really have any of the conventional POSIX layers. It only exists to run a high-level language runtime, such as OCaml, and soon support for other languages. And the vast majority of other code remained in OCaml. So it's a very, very small system. For those familiar with Xen, the x86 driver model is a thing of nightmares. I think we have a total of 6 different ways to boot x86 virtual machines now, HVM, PVH, PVHVM, which is different. And all of these are because of the different hardware quirks present in x86. The ARM model requires hardware ARM virtualization and is just a breath of fresh air. It doesn't have QMU emulation and a lot of the other DOM0 bits that made x86 so very complex. But at the same time, we have much less CPU available. So we're trying to figure out how we can optimize the tool stack on this new MiniOS port to make sure that we don't use up the precious cycles in a normal ARM box. So one of the first things we did was try to figure out, when you boot virtual machines, one thing we observed in Xen was that the more machines you're booting in parallel, the more asymptotically slow it gets. And the reason for this is that the coordination system within the tool stack was just not designed to boot at large numbers of virtual machines. And so its notion of transactions involved just backing off immediately whenever it ran into a long-running transaction. So the details in the paper, but with the original Xen tool stack written in C, you can see that as you booted up more parallel virtual machines, the amount of time it would take would just tremendously rise, up to minutes in some occasions. And with a sequence of successive optimizations designed to prevent conflicts and backoffs in the transaction store, we can now get a pretty good rate of parallel boots without causing any undue conflicts. So the first thing was to prevent the massive explosion of conflicts, to prevent the boot time from ever going up to minutes, even if you're booting lots of unikernels up. The next step was just a very, very methodical process of getting rid of a number of latency crimes in a hot data path. So whenever you look at the normal Xen boot times, so this graph represents the virtual machine memory overheads on the bottom that intrinsically increase the boot time, and then the amount of time it takes to boot and transmit a network packet. So in this case, we have, for Linux, unmodified, a boot time of around 700 milliseconds. And by removing a sequence of shell scripts, a whole bunch of ping-pongs, a bunch of serialized device attachments, for example, a virtual machine refuses to do any work until its console attaches. In the case of a unikernel, it can happily continue to do networking initialization in parallel with the console. We got it down to about 150 milliseconds to boot. Now, this is an ARM. On x86, these optimizations resulted in close to instantaneous boot time. Because we have so much more CPU on x86, it got it all the way down to 10 milliseconds. So it's interesting that although all of this work was done in ARM, it just works out of the box in x86, and any data centers that are requiring this kind of fast boot and hyperfluidity can take advantage of this. And in fact, one of our colleagues from NEC has just got a paper in HotCloud describing how they can take advantage of this kind of technique in an x86 data center as well. So there's a lot of life in this kind of latency emphasis in the longer term. Once that was done, we now have the ability to boot in just a few milliseconds, but it's still significant. And we wanted to make sure that we had a really good solid mechanism for inter-unikernel communication. And here we turn to our old friends from Plan 9. And what they have is a mechanism to get a directory-style system that can establish peer-to-peer connections without involving any network sockets. It looks very, very similar to the Plan 9 model in the sense that it provides a rendezvous facility for virtual machines to publish parts in a directory-style namespace, and then coordinate and communicate and form shared memory channels. The details are in the paper, of course. It's worth just pointing out how tree-like this thing is. So we didn't invent a new tool stack for this. We used the existing ZenStore tool stack that already is used by virtual machines to communicate device driver information and simply extended it with all of the information required to implement a Plan9-style-like file system. And although I won't go into details over here, it's worth just noting how elegant it is compared to building yet another tool chain in order to interoperate. We can use all of the existing Zen tools to figure out what the state of shared memory communications are between unikernels. So once this is done, things get interesting, because we now have the ability to boot unikernels and set up shared memory channels. And Jitsu is a directory service that launches a virtual machine at boot time, and it handles name resolution, whether it's from a local node or remote from DNS. So it can actually start taking external network traffic and start activating unikernels on demand. And the goal of Jitsu is very simple. When something arrives, it will boot the unikernel, and after a timeout, it will just kill the service. And if the unikernel is not ready, it will also act as a proxy. Now, getting this race-free was fairly non-trivial. The most obvious way for Jitsu to work is that you have a client that makes a DNS request, and the query goes into Jitsu, which then proceeds to invoke the Zen domain builder and then boot the unikernel. The obvious problem, though, is that the unikernel, even if it boots in 10 milliseconds, can still miss a SYN because a client might be on the local LAN and acting in a matter of milliseconds. So in this case, the client would send a SYN, it would time out, and it would take a second to send another SYN, and that's a very, very high latency that's observable. So what we did was we built Synjitsu. And what Synjitsu does is that it splits the unikernel in half and takes the TCP IP stack that is sufficient to ACK the packet, and it records and buffers it in ZenStore and waits for the networking subsystem and all of the other bits to boot up. This takes another few milliseconds in the boot process. And once that's done and the networking becomes active, the Synjitsu will replay immediately to the unikernel, which at boot time will read from its conduit namespace, understand exactly what packets are waiting, and instantaneously just leap into action, take over the connections, and start serving the actual protocol traffic, in this case, HTTP. So a lot of that was quite effective, because by the act of acting all this buffering, we managed to get the latency down to a few hundred milliseconds. So on x86, the boot latency, as I observed, was 30 to 45, and we got it to around 350 to 400 milliseconds for a cold boot on one of these ARM boxes. So there's still scope to get it down to the low amount of numbers by doing more low-level Zen and particularly memory optimizations, but we're pretty happy that we can actually boot a service in a virtual machine at this low latency. So it's interesting observing. This graph here from the paper just shows how different clumps of latency happen for different modes of Jitsu. So on the right here, we have we have a mode without any optimizations or buffering, and then as we add more of the optimizations we described, we start getting down for all of our requests into the nice, reliable 300 millisecond range. Docker was, by default, a second or more. And the reason for this is that when you boot Linux containers, it forces you to touch a disk because you have to set up your AFS file system or your BitterFS layer in file system, and that just takes a lot of time. In contrast, unikernels just boot without a block device, and they can parallelize all of their operations in order to make sure that they go as quickly as possible. So I'm just going to hand over to my colleague Magnus, who will take you through a little bit more flavor on how this works. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to show you a short demonstration of how it works with. Let's see if we can. With Jitsu and unikernels running on a Qubi board. Here we have three SSH sessions to an ARM board, a Qubi board. And in the lower session, we're going to see the VMs that are currently running. Right now, we only have the host operating system, domain zero. And we also have a couple of VMs that have been set up, but they are not started yet. So first, I'm going to run a web server as a unikernel, which is then managed by Jitsu. So we're starting Jitsu, and we're going to use the domain jitsu.io, and DNS requests for that domain name will return the IP address 192.168.25. And we also tell Jitsu to destroy the domain after there when there hasn't been activity for a certain timeout period, it will be destroyed, and we will forward unknown DNS requests to 8888, which is Google's name server. So now Jitsu is running. So now if we ping the domain, jitsu.io, that should start the VM automatically. And here we can see that the VM booted and replies to the ping request. And we can also try to telnet to port 80, just to verify that the web server is actually running. So we kill the web server and telnet to the domain on port 80. And we can see that we're connected, and we can download the index.html file, which is a Hello Mirage World HTML file. But you may have noticed that there was an initial delay here, since there's a race when we boot unikernel, and we may lose the first SYN of the TCP connection. So we can see, again, when we telnet to the web server, we can see that we're trying to connect, and then we get the connection is opened. And this is because there was a SYN retransmission, which took one additional second. So that's why we need Sunjitsu as well. So, and what Sunjitsu will do is that it's a unikernel that runs all the time, and it will capture incoming SYNs, store them in SendStore so that they can be picked up by the unikernel when it has booted. So now Sunjitsu has been started. And we also need to run, instead of the web server, we'll run the Sunjitsu app, which is defined here, which basically does the same thing as the web server. It opens, it listens to port 80, but it has been compiled with a TCP IP stack that has Sunjitsu support enabled. So now the Sunjitsu app is running, and we can now telnet to Jitsu.io again on port 80, and this time we shouldn't have any visible delay when we connect. And again, the Sunjitsu app will be booted, yep, and we're connected, and there was no delay. And what happened was that when the initial SYN came in, the Sunjitsu app hadn't completed its boot process yet, but Sunjitsu captured the SYN, and when the unikernel was ready 50 to 100 milliseconds later, it picked up the SYN from sensor, which was looked something like this. This is how the serialized format of the SYN looks like. And injected it into its TCP IP stack, and that triggered a SYNAC, which was sent back to the client. So that's basically how it works.
Thanks, Magnus. And so just to wrap up, ZenArm is here. It's interesting that it's actually not very well known compared to obviously the x86 ARM, but there's a lot of commodity hardware, and it's a really, really good way to run embedded edge experiments. So to make it easier for other people to take advantage of Zen, we've actually got a bunch of build scripts that are just freely available that are a Linux and Zen distribution with everything pre-installed, and you can just buy one of these QB boards and get started. You can obviously do Linux-based experiments. You don't have to use unikernels, but I don't see why you wouldn't. And then the other good thing is that all of the existing tools that we use in Zen are robust and just continue to work with this tool stack. And the other thing that the research here has shown is just there's no fundamental drawback to virtual machines versus containers. It's just a matter of establishing the right discipline in order to make sure that you can define your services carefully and architect the data path of the latency and the actual network communications well, and just avoid touching disk and doing all the usual optimizations that people need to do. And shipping out type-safe code all the way to the edge has been a dramatic success. We've been building more and more complex deployments, and we're pretty happy with this whole idea of starting from a clean slate library OS in a high-level language. Ongoing work, there's tons of work that I won't go into detail, but we're working on making Sunjitsu multi-protocol so we can terminate TLS handshakes, so you can get even more benefit from the buffering, and also working in wide area redirection so that you can detect when ARM boxes go down and redirect to a cloud service or some other hierarchy, and also just working on increasing the number of platforms, including support for non-Zen-based hosts. So thank you very much for your time, and if you'd like to hear any more, you can go to the website or come grab me afterwards. Thanks.
Questions? So I actually have a question for you. So I noticed that you have made an interesting choice of using OCaml, which is quite unusual. I'm just trying to understand, you know, the experience of using OCaml in terms of performance, in terms of usability, programmability, and those issues.
So when we started doing Mirage in about 2011, OCaml was the only statically type-safe systems language we could use. So this is before like Go and Rust even existed. So it's a really stable, natively compiled, single-threaded systems language. So it means that you can just output assembly or ARM or x86 code and just have something run very, very fast. So we've hit gigabit-level speeds with tool stacks just built entirely in OCaml, so TCP and SSL and so on. So it's actually just been a very good success. It's also very stable. It's when we're building this much code, you just need something that doesn't change all the time. But I'm sure in the future, Rust in particular will become a viable alternative to use as well. So,
thanks. Great. So let's thank the speakers and for the great demo as well.
Thank you.